KPCW News Time now, 8:12. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now in the studio with an update on open space, Cheryl Fox, Director of Summit Land Conservancy. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start first. You had hoped to make an announcement on a conservation easement, but can't just quite yet.
We do have a new conservation easement coming, and we had hoped to be able to announce it today. It is on a property that is highly visible, and people will recognize it when they see it. And the beauty of this is that it is being donated. So that means that, you know, we don't have to raise money for it. So this is a huge thank you to the landowners in this situation. But unfortunately, I can't say exactly which piece of property it is. Maybe next week.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. Where do things stand with the Oscarthorpe property?
So we have raised over $3 million now for the Oscarthorpe campaign. We do have a great new video that we made because I think a lot of people were thinking that we had saved it. It's not done. The project is not the property is not saved. The video is right on our front page. If you go to wesaveland.org, you'll see it right there and click on it. It's only a couple of minutes. But we think that it explains really clearly and nicely why this is important for the community to save this particular farm. And right now we do have a $200,000 matching grant, so all donations are doubled.
Great. That goes through when? Just until it's matched?
Until it's matched. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And actually, we've been hunting hops all summer, but we're actually ready to harvest, huh?
The harvest is coming, yes. So Friday, August 31st, will be the hops harvest. If people would like to join us, we'd love to have the volunteers to show up at the Sweet Alley side of the Wasatch Brew Pub at 9 a.m., which is a little bit later than usual, so I think that's very civilized. We encourage people to, you know, bring gloves if you have them, long pants. Sometimes it's very chilly that early in the morning. Prepare to hike a little bit because we do hike up to the hops populations. And then we will come back and we sit there in sort of the back bay of the brew pub and we pull the hop cones off of the vines. And then the cones go right into the vat and they make our clothing optional beer. We do need people to RSVP because after we've done harvesting, the brew pub gives us all a lunch. So we're really happy that the Wasatch Brew Pub helps us and sponsors this activity. So RSVP to Julia@wesaveland.org.
Okay. And then we're going to be drinking it later in September.
That's right. The Hoppy Hour is scheduled for Saturday, September 29th, and we'll have more information as we go forward with that. I did want to mention the cows on the McPolin farmland that people might have been seeing. We are working with the city and Bill White Farms on restoring and enhancing the McPolin Farms and its ability to basically sequester carbon, increase biodiversity, and the watershed, the water quality as it comes across that property. And so the intensive grazing is a tool that can be used. And already there are about 125 cows out there. They're very tightly managed and they are doing their job, which is pulling down the weeds and clearing out the old irrigation canals and those kinds of things, irrigation ditches and those types of things.
See, now this goes against everything we've heard, though, about livestock in areas where there is rivers. I mean, because they're causing the degradation of the stream banks. And so why do we want to do this there?
They will be closely managed so that they don't cause that degradation. But you also have issues. What they found is they've done studies and, you know, they say, okay, livestock cause this problem. And they do if they're not managed properly on properties because they'll stumble down the stream banks and cause a lot of erosion. And then there's more stuff in the water, right? So you have to manage them very carefully. But if you don't manage them and you don't have any grazing animals on the property, then you get overgrowth of weeds and thatch. And what we're trying to do is enhance the soils on this property because soils really are our best way to sequester carbon and pull carbon out of the atmosphere. We all think of trees as sequestering carbon because, you know, they're big and they stick up in front of us. But in fact, soils are far more effective at sequestering carbon and they sequester the carbon for a much longer period of time. The tree only sequesters carbon as long as that tree lives. When it falls down or burns down or gets cut down, that carbon then gets released back into the atmosphere, whereas soils actually pull it out. So more and more studies are showing that if we can increase the carbon sequestration in our soil, so increase there's little organisms and fungi and everything down in there. And that, again, the cattle on this property, when they the manure and as they step through the thatch that's there, all of that enhances the ecosystem that we don't see that's underneath the soil.
Well, but we've also heard manure is like the biggest contributor to methane gas.
Yes, so, we have. So in a properly managed system, that manure actually will go back into the soil and into the system. And so that's what we're really working with the city. We're excited about it because, you know, these open spaces are great from a recreational point of view and a visual point of view. And if we can also have them increasing and working with the city's net zero goals, we think that's a pretty good, you know, multi-use, multitasking. There is a informational walk coming up. It's on Wednesday, October 22nd, so that's next week, from 5 to 7 p.m. People are going to meet at the McPolin Trailhead, which is on 224 opposite the McPolin Barn. We do, you know, there's not much parking there, so we're encouraging people to take the bus or ride their bikes. And Luke Carton, who is the City Sustainability Director, and Bill White will be leading that walk and talking about exactly how the processes work and why we're doing it.
Okay. I heard October. It's August 22nd.
August. Yes. Sorry.
What time?
August 22nd from 5 to 7 p.m.
5 to 7. Okay.
Who knows what I said?
The Moonshine Adventure, that's coming up later this month, too. What's
that? That's right. So we like to go out and play in the dark in the well, actually, we do it winter and summer. So these are full moon adventures. We do them in conjunction with our friends at Mountain Trails. And this is next week, August 24th, which is Friday. And people meet at the Quinns Junction Trailhead and the Round Valley Quinns Junction Trailhead at 8:30 p.m. And there are three different groups. So there's a bike, a hike, and a run. People need to bring good lights, good headlamps. These go out rain or shine. I know they've had some really interesting adventures with some interesting weather. But it's a great opportunity to kind of get out and see the landscape under the moonlight.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
We do still have tickets to the Blue Sky Bash. So I think that it's important that people realize that, you know, the open spaces that we see and we enjoy here were not protected by accident and they weren't protected for free. So if you like the open space and you like whiskey, you can get tickets at wesaveland.org.
Okay,
and that's,
Cheryl.
August 25th.
Great. Hey, thanks for your time this morning. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:20. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPC. 8:21, good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, lots going on in Heber City. Joining me now on the phone to discuss some of that, I have the mayor of Heber City, Colleen Potty. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, let's start with the, let's start with the new city manager. He started last month?
Yeah, he started in the middle of July, and so he's just been here a few weeks, but we are so pleased. He's doing a great job and has just the right experience, and I think it's going to be a great fit for Heber.
Okay. We've been, we're scheduled to talk with him later on, though, but why did he stand out?
Well, he had, like I say, he worked in several different cities. We had some great applicants. We had over 60 people apply. But he was one who had been a city manager in Florida and California, also in Utah, though. So he's from Utah. He understands the culture. He wanted to get back to Utah. But he's also seen a lot of different things with cities that were growing rapidly. He was most recently in a city that had a similar situation where their traffic on their main street was causing a lot of problems, and they wanted to revitalize it. They ended up building a bypass and creating a more vibrant downtown than ever. So we felt like he had so many relevant experiences to the issues that Heber's facing right now. So that's one of the main reason he stood out.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that. The studies that I think what UDOT, the Heber City, and some of the chamber is funding.
Yeah, actually, it's Heber, just Heber and UDOT are funding the studies. But we did have a big open house last week to get some public input, and we're right in the middle of this big process.
So can you tell us what's the plan?
So UDOT funded about $200,000 to look at this potential bypass. I don't think bypass is the best word for it. That kind of gives us unrealistic expectations of a really high-speed road swinging around Heber City. But in the past decade or so, Heber City and Wasatch County have preserved a corridor or are working on preserving a corridor to be able to reroute some traffic around Main Street and hopefully ultimately down back onto 40 on the south end. And the idea is to get this study from UDOT to be able to establish this preferred corridor so that we can ask for funding from the legislature. And ultimately, we want to dedicate that road as US 40 and then have Heber City take Main Street as a local road so that we would have the control to make some changes and try to make it economically a more viable place and a more walkable Main Street.
Yeah, so that you're trying to bypass the trucks then and then keep Main Street for slower Main Street traffic, residents kind of thing, or is it vice versa?
No, we would hope to have the trucks take the bypass, particularly the trucks and any traffic that has no intention of stopping. You know, there's been some studies, and they take license plates, and they can kind of see the percentage of cars that go just, you know, Park City to Provo, or, you know, coming through 40, just trying to get back to, you know, the trucks going from Vernal through Park City to the refineries. And it would ideally be a route that those cars could take, and then the people who are local or traffic that, you know, has stops to make on Main Street or would be likely to can, of course, stay on Main Street.
Yeah. So coming from Park City, so we would be heading kind of south. Does this bypass go to the east of town or west of town?
This bypass would go west of town. There's also going to be an eastern bypass that doesn't go all the way through, but at the west end of Red Ledges, they're going to create a road off of Center Street. So it's just a, you know, mile and a half east of Main Street, but then it will connect and come down a little further north on 40. But this particular route is on the west side. It would be just almost the border of Heber City, kind of, you know, in between the Northfields and Heber City. So it is sensitive land, and we will have to have an environmental study to see if it's even doable. But that's where it's charted right now.
Right. And, I mean, is it going through neighborhoods? I mean, nobody wants truck traffic through their neighborhood, huh?
No, it won't go through any neighborhoods, but it will be behind some neighborhoods. And so that, you know, there's definitely people speaking out saying, well, we don't want it going behind our neighborhood. There's really no other alternative that anyone has come up with at this point. The traffic studies that they've done so far have shown that by 2040, without any kind of a alternate route, we have likely a mile's worth of traffic piling up trying to come into our Main Street on Heber City.
So what kind of road are we talking about? I mean, just a two-lane with bike lanes on either side, or are we talking a center lane as well? Or?
Well, it's not. It hasn't been determined entirely, but in some of the discussions that have happened, we were envisioning something with a bike lane and trail, possibly ultimately, you know, four lanes. But initially, I think it would start out smaller, and then, you know, the width would be preserved to expand it over time. But it's still kind of up in the air what exactly it would look like.
We've been talking about this for years. I mean, how much more property needs to be acquired, and is that doable?
Yeah, I think it's doable because it's not requiring any condemnation. It's mostly open fields, and some of it would be dedicated as part of development on the Heber City side. Other parts have already been purchased with some corridor preservation funds that the county has established through vehicle registrations. So the first section, it's pretty doable. The southern part is a little bit trickier because that route was not preserved. And so some developments are coming in even right now that are going to make it harder. So that's why there's an urgency to establish the route. And then if the route's established and the environmental study's done, UDOT will help the city and county preserve that route if something comes forward to be developed.
Yeah. So has the study been completed, or is that what the meeting was about last week?
No, it's not completed. It's anticipated being completed in December. It was started this summer, actually in the spring, and this was the first open house for the public to give their input, and there will be one more in the fall.
Okay. So did you get a good turnout?
We got a great turnout. We had a you know, two-hour open house, but there were people there a half hour before and a half hour after, and it was pretty full the entire time. So we had a lot of interest from the public.
Yeah. What do you think the biggest concerns are?
I think the biggest, there are some people concerned that a bypass would hurt businesses on Main Street. And there are people concerned who it actually impacts, you know, within certain distance of their property. There's still a lot of concerns about traffic. You know, how do we, people are speeding. Actually, it's bumper to bumper. So we get comments on both sides of that, you know, issue that Main Street is, it's just not a vibrant downtown. And a lot of the businesses are concerned about parking. That's one of the big things with the local businesses is that there's a lot of traffic and it's hard to park and, you know, people can't get to the movie theater because there's nowhere to park. So all those issues.
Yeah. So are we talking, is it really just on the south side of it that we need to acquire the property?
Well, there's still property to be acquired on the north and central part of it. But because the route hasn't been determined on the south end, that whole thing will have to be, you know, connected from Walmart down to 40 again, wherever that route may be. And UDOT's come up with a new scenario that hasn't been on the table recently, at least in the discussions, that would make it a little shorter and more direct, but that would impact more property. So that one's kind of, you know, more controversial. But there's one, you know, the others on the south impact a new development that's trying to come in. And they feel, you know, they're trying to move ahead. And, you know, this process is happening. So there's definitely a lot of moving parts right now.
Okay. Let's talk quickly about the contract with the nuclear power company in Oregon. I think, did you go out for a site visit?
We did. We spent 2 days there and just saw where the testing facility is and the laboratories where they're doing research. And, yeah, all the board except for one, I think, were there. And then we had last week, again, we had a open house for the public. And the inventors of this, you know, this type of process and someone from the nuclear laboratories in Idaho came and someone from UAMPS, and they presented their information. We also had someone from another group, HEAL, and I can't think of what the acronym stands for right now. Healthy Energy, anyway. But they also, we allowed them to present on the meeting also so we could get some contrast and differing viewpoints, and it was a great meeting.
Mm-hmm. So where do you go from here?
Well, we are going to, we don't have to make a final decision until next spring, so it will have to go back on the agenda and be voted on. There's still a lot of emails and information coming in, and I'm anxious to explore every option. Hopefully, we'll be able to come to a consensus. I think a lot of the concerns were resolved with the people that came there, but there's sort of this lingering issue about cost, and is it really, most of the nuclear projects have gone over cost. So far, these guys are going under what they'd anticipated, but it's still higher than a lot of the other energy that we're getting right now. So the question is, in the future, is this what it's, you know, is this going to be a good deal for Heber, or is it going to be higher than other energy that we, other, you know, other renewable resources that we could acquire?
Hmm. Okay, so you don't expect anything to be decided for several months here?
I don't. I think it'll be a little few more months.
Okay.
And they're anxious for us to decide. They want us to decide yesterday, but I don't think that we're there yet.
All right. And will there be more public input?
I think there's always, I don't think we'll have a public hearing that we've talked about. There's always opportunity for people to come to meetings or, you know, informally, but we haven't scheduled another public hearing or talked about it.
Okay. I also wanted to ask you quickly about the funding for the airport from the Federal Aviation Administration. This is a standard subsidy that you receive every year?
Yeah, there's a $150,000, just kind of a regular amount of money that comes to all the airports. And ours is going to be used for some resurfacing next year. So it wasn't anything new or nothing to do with any kind of expansion or changing the land use of the airport.
But we are talking about some master planning for the airport, yeah?
We are. And the FAA is very anxious for us to do a master plan. There's been some resistance to that in the community because a lot of people equate that with upgrading the airport from a B2 to a C2. So it's been pushed off by councils in the last years. But I think that it's going to happen in the next year or two.
And just in terms of starting to plan, that's what's going to happen the next year?
Yeah, what's going to happen in the future of this airport? There's a lot of interest in business opportunities. We've had an application for a second FBO that was in our city council meeting. So because of all the interest around this, the city, I think, is getting more interested, the council anyway, in being ready to do a master plan update so that we can have some predictability for the future of the airport.
Yeah. So could it be expanded, though? I mean, is there the room to do that?
Well, that's kind of the big question is it possible? Would it impact the road? Would it impact, would it impact another jurisdiction, Daniel, which is, Heber City doesn't have any right to condemn property in Daniel. So that's the question that hasn't been answered, and it would need to happen in a master plan update.
Okay. And where are we quickly with the annexation of the what's known as the Sorenson property?
Well, our annexation policy plan was on the agenda again last week, along with about 11 or 12 other things that the council, county council had asked the city to do, and the city council wanted to make sure they were all taken care of. We're down to our meeting on Thursday. We'll have about three of those that they wanted to make some changes. And then the whole policy plan was tabled. But my understanding is that the council is ready to move forward with that likely this week. And that would mean that we had a boundary on our annexation policy plan where the Sorensons could come and apply for annexation and start that process.
Okay. Do we know if they want to?
I think they're interested, yeah. Okay. I don't know what the details would be and what the council would be open to, but I know that they've been interested. They've come to meetings, and so, yeah.
All right. Hey, Colleen, thanks for your time. 8:36 now. Good morning. Well, the Utah Debate Commission starting a two-week poll period to determine which candidates will be part of the first congressional district debate scheduled for October 17th. One of the candidates hoping to be included is the Utah United Party candidate, Eric Eliason. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So how does this polling work that decides whether or not you get included?
So they poll, I think the sample size, somewhere just north of 400 people. They ask 400 people who they'll vote for, and they have a threshold of 10% to be included in the poll. Of course, as a third-party candidate, that really matters. Some of the others are kind of automatics. And so it is I think the margin of error is plus or minus 4%, so you got to be north of 6% to be included in that.
Right. And is it prompted? I mean, they'll give people a list of candidates?
They'll give people a list of candidates. They choose from the list of there'll be four on that list. It matters to us because undecided, people might be, say, undecided, and then that just goes towards no one being included into the poll, into the debate. So we're really excited to see where this is going to be. We have no idea. I had a really big push the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. So why is it important that you're part of the debate?
Well, number one, it's an opportunity for us to be heard. We're actually not just going to try to make a statement in this race. We're trying to win the race. We're trying to build a coalition. We are drawing people from the right and the left. If we can get a big enough coalition, that could be a win for us. And so the first step is this poll, see where we're at, and a lot of momentum can come behind that.
Yeah. So when do you find out whether or not you're
in? The first week of September. So our understanding is they have 2 weeks that the poll is out in the field, 1 week for prep, and then the following week they let us know.
All right. So these are going to be phone calls to people's homes? Is that how they're going to do it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It could be people are using the polling groups are using a mix usually lately to see who is included.
Yeah. So as the incumbent, isn't Rob Bishop a shoo-in? He doesn't need to do interviews. He doesn't need to do debates. He's got the R behind his name, and he's got the voice, the name recognition.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is we've come out really, really, really hard. And all of a sudden, we're seeing Rob more than we've seen in the past. He's got four town halls scheduled, which we find rather unique. He sent out the flyer to everybody. It was on the franking privilege 68 days before the ballots go out, and he sends it on the taxpayer dollar. I'm not quite sure. Didn't quite understand that, but he is coming out. We saw him at the Weber County Fair and at the Cache County Fair. So we think with our press and our push, things are changing a little bit.
Third-party candidates, as you know, have a tough time winning elections. Why not run as a Republican?
The Republican mix this year was particularly tough. First of all, we had SB 54, and SB 54, right before the registration for candidates, the Republican committee ruled out that people in Congressional District 1 and Congressional District 2 could use SB 54, the signature process, to get on the ballot. And that, of course, got reversed. Kevin Probasco was trying to do the signature route. And as he tried to do the signature route, it was kind of a jerk. Yeah, it's okay, it's not okay. And by the time he got it done, he came up short. I think he spent something like $60,000 and came up short on getting signatures. And not only that, but I've never really been I've never been a registered Republican. It makes it a little bit hard. I've been unaffiliated very intentionally, very strongly. And so when there's an opportunity to run as a moderate with United Utah, it's like, well, you know, that matched my politics a lot better. And I think there's a moment in the political scheme in our country where people are looking for something other than an R and a D.
So what do you think that the United Utah Party stands for that the Utah Republican or Utah Democratic parties don't?
Well, first of all, you know, one of the biggest things is seeking common ground, using common sense and seeking common ground. So in other words, it's and this is really important for me, is that everybody looks at solutions being on these two platforms. And you know, we view compromise as being somewhere in between. But what I find is so often solutions don't even lie on the political spectrum between Republican and Democrat. People just have good ideas. And, you know, look how many times people just simply take the one party will take the opposite view of the opposite party just for I don't know what reason. We even see some flip-flopping going on lately. On things like tariffs, where one side's taking the opposite side. And really, we need to set aside, I think, a lot of that partisanship and look for good direction forward.
So what do you want our listeners to know about your campaign?
Well, first of all, I think a lot may have seen in the press that we're running a serious campaign. We're running with good funding, along in Park City, you don't see it perhaps as much as along the Ogden, where we've got billboards flying. You know, right now we could have 12 billboards up at any given moment. We want them to know that we represent a bigger, broader majority of Utahns, we feel, particularly in Congressional District 1. We want them to know that we are different on a number of things. Let me just kind of mention a couple. Versus Rob Bishop, Rob and everybody out in Congress right now, they're arguing about who pays for an expensive health care system rather than the underlying cost of health care. Number two, public lands really matter to us, and that's one of the reasons that I've chosen to run. I look at what Rob Bishop's doing out in Congress. I don't feel like he's doing much to help many of us at all, and what he is doing on natural resources, I think, is a negative.
So you didn't support the monument and public lands being shrunk?
Definitely not. Now, that being said, monument or non-monument, these areas need to be protected. I think it's just this huge pendulum swing back and forth. Depending on who's in Congress, it becomes more of a political issue than about those lands and what needs to be done to protect those lands.
So, again, you do not agree with the president's action there.
On shrinking the monument?
Mm-hmm.
I think one way or the other, there's other designations that I think can be quite good. I'm an outdoorsman. I spent I was with a backpack about 500 miles last year. Out in these lands, including Escalante, and there's, you know, a monument designation attracts a lot of people to an area. So
which is good if you want the tourism dollars.
If you want the tourism dollars, but also it can pull people into areas where there's artifacts and other things like that to see. So What I agree with is the protection of the land, regardless of the designation.
All right. Well, what about immigration? I mean, how would you and Rob Bishop disagree there?
Well, it's kind of hard to know exactly where Rob falls on that. While others in our delegation were talking about it, he wasn't as much. So, number one, I don't agree with completely open borders at all. Number two, I feel like the immigrants that we have here in Utah are very, very important to the economy. They're important to our agriculture. They're important to our tourism industry. And three, I feel like we need to have a path of DACA for the people who are here on DACA to citizenship. I think there's a tone in this country that really undervalues what immigrants bring into our economy, and especially this time when the job markets are tight, they're doing a lot for our economy right now.
Let's talk. The United Utah Party makes allowances for abortion, typical of the Republican platform, fatal deformities, rape, incest, the health and safety of the mother. But it doesn't make the exception for woman's choice. So you support that party platform, huh?
Yeah, I'm pro-life. Just to give you a little bit of background, my two oldest daughters are adopted. I have four kids. My two oldest are adopted. They were born to teen mothers. I think the common ground between me and someone that's pro-choice is we don't want unwanted pregnancies. Unwanted pregnancies, especially the general traditional Republican background of, look, we're going to be pro-life, but then we're not going to provide any supports for those who end up having babies and don't have an ability to support them. I think the common ground is that we look for opportunities where we can prevent unwanted pregnancies and support moms.
Okay. I'm out of time, Eric, but if you don't get into this debate October 17th, I mean, what are some of the other opportunities that you're going to be participating in?
We're doing a lot of town hall meetings. We've got one in Park City. We had it scheduled for next week. We've got two conflicts, and so by the end of the day, we'll be letting people in Park City know when we're going to be here. It may be the following week. And we'll be aggressively out in the communities as we have been already.
Okay. Well, let us know when that happens and we can get that word out there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your time this morning. It's 8:48. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Colville's hometown jewel, the Ledges, has been enjoyed for thousands of years. It's also being jeopardized by a growing amount of graffiti. On the phone to tell us more about it, I have Summit County historian Navi Vernon. Good morning.
Good morning.
So at the county fair, we just dedicated the new Ledges Event Center to replace the old Quonset Hut. So tell us, what are the ledges, or is it just the ledge?
It is. There is several ledges in Colville, in the vicinity of Colville. But on the northeast side of Colville, there is a huge white sandstone cliff, and that is what we call the Colville Ledge.
Okay.
It's one of the first sites you see as you enter Colville.
Okay. And so there, I mean, it's a historic site. I mean, we've got, ancient petroglyphs there? Do we have any idea how old they are?
Yes, we do have a lot of petroglyphs on it. What's significant against the rock art style is it's from three different regions, they tell me. The Eastern Great Basin, the Colorado Plateau, and the Northwest Plains are all represented there with the rock art that's on the ledge.
Now, the cliffs are actually owned by the North Summit School District?
Yes.
So
North Summit.
Yeah, so they can't be protected anyway as kind of a historical monument?
Oh, no, it can be protected, and the North Summit School District is working with us. And we are trying to get some protection and make people aware of it and trying to stop the graffiti that's been sprayed on it.
Right. Are you able to clean the graffiti off, or does that ruin then the petroglyph that's there?
Some of the graffiti, you're going to have to be very careful, is what I understand. When you're cleaning it off or you do remove the rock art. but a lot of the graffiti can be removed.
All right. My understanding is that there's even been some graffiti there left, though, by the Mormon pioneers?
Oh, not that I know of. There is some, and I find these very interesting. There is a lot of engravings of names that are on the ledge that they exist all from 1857, 1871, 1913. And so I find them just as interesting as the rock art in some ways. And the names, we tried to look up some of the names and who the people are that represent those names. And we find a little history with them.
Okay. The problem, though, being the modern-day graffiti with the spray cans?
Yeah, with the spray can is the problem. I don't think people have really realized that the rock art is on the ledge. You have to see some of the most interesting sights when the sun hits it just right. And I think through the years, the town people have climbed the ledge for years and years. The kids have played on it. It's been a wonderful place where people have climbed and enjoyed themselves. And I think sometimes they've sprayed or wrote their name on there, not realizing that the rock art was there.
Right. So what would you like to see in terms of preservation?
I would like to see us remove some of the graffiti. Where some of the graffiti is there is an abandoned aqueduct that is tunneled through the ledge that they used to bring the ditch water from the Chalk Creek over into the Northside farms. And right through there is sprayed a lot, and I think we can remove that. And it won't bother any of the rock art. But there is another thing that is really interesting about the ledge and the preservation. There used to be a rock quarry on it, and the sandstone rock is what is the Summit County Courthouse is built from, and there are several homes around that still are here that are built from the sandstone rock. And so there is a lot of other history elements there that we can talk about that's on the ledge.
Ah, okay. And you're working with Utah State historians with this?
Yes, the Utah State Historical Society is interested in helping us, and the North Summit School District is, and we're all working together as a group to see what we can do with that.
Right, so any kind of budget to work with at this point?
Not at this point, no.
Yeah, and I mean, is there some way to prevent people from going up there after hours or something, maybe when some of the graffiti's been happening?
I think so. I hate to stop people from preventing it. I've been scared to make the rock art, you know, known to people, but I think there is enough respect that people, knowing that it is there, maybe won't spray. I do have a few security cameras there at the moment, and maybe we can see who is being the abusers. I think it's probably mostly kids that are just up there to play or whatever they're doing.
Okay. So you mentioned this was on the northeast side of town, so it's not as you just kind of pull in off of the interstate, huh? You'd need to drive north on Main Street there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's two creeks that run through Colville. There's the Weber River and then Chalk Creek. Chalk Creek runs right underneath it, and it was named after the ledge also. So.
Okay. All right, Navi, anything else you wanted to tell us about it?
Nope, I just hope that with the current efforts, we can learn to protect the site and preserve it for generations to come, and like to invite people over to it and respect it, and if you do climb it, do respect it.
Okay. Navi, thanks for your time this morning.
You bet, and thank you.
That's Summit County historian Navi Vernon. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, three of the four school districts along the Wasatch Back are increasing their property taxes for the coming school year with an $8.6 million increase approved for the tentative budget. The Wasatch County School District's tax increase is the largest. Park City's, though, is right behind. Park City, South Summit, and the Wasatch School Districts are all proposing the tax increases. The increased taxes will be used to fund salary increases and to deal with new growth. Wasatch and South Summit are seeing twice as much growth in their districts as Park City is. All three of the districts are holding truth and taxation public hearings this week. Park City and South Summit School District meetings will be held tonight, 6 o'clock, at their respective district offices. The Wasatch Board of Education holding their meeting on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. there at the district office. Over the last 4 years, the Wasatch School District has grown from budget has grown from $62.5 million to more than $84 million. That's an increase of almost $22 million. This year's percentage increase of the budget is the largest proposed of the three districts, coming in at 13.8% over last year's budget. With that, those new tax dollars, what that will look like is about $140 more each year on a home that's valued at $440,000. Joining me now on the phone, I have the superintendent of Wasatch County School District, Paul Sweat. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, again, what's the proposal here, Paul, at Thursday's meeting?
Well, we are having a truth and taxation hearing this Thursday evening at 6:30. We are proposing to give our teachers a 5% raise. That would put them just over the $41,000 mark. You know, we're experiencing unprecedented growth over here, and you know, it's our responsibility to keep up with that growth and provide the best education possible for students. And you know, number one on our list right now is, with the economy the way it is and fewer people choosing to go into teaching, is to retain and recruit the very best teachers we can.
Right. So with the money provided by the state legislature, then, that didn't accommodate all of the new growth that you're seeing?
No. The state legislature certainly is one part of the formula, but our local tax levies are another part of the formula. And as you know, state tax law is such that rates the certified tax rate only guarantees us what we got the year before. And so as new growth comes in, the rate actually dials down. And without the entity coming forward and either freezing that rate or raising that rate to capture the growth in its entirety. So this is a necessary thing for us. We have teacher raises as number one on our list. We also have a student safety initiative. We've taken our student safety very seriously as the Parkland shooting happened last year and got all of our attention. We are putting a resource officer in each of our schools this coming school year, and did so last spring for the last couple of months of the year. So teacher raises, school safety. We're raising our capital levy a little bit to make sure that we have money to purchase new school sites moving forward, and we're also bolstering our number one educational goal in Wasatch District right now, which is our literacy initiative. We're doing some things to target those early years of our students, and we're offering all-day kindergarten to all of our patrons this year that would like to take advantage of that. And through a state grant, we've expanded our preschool, and so we're doing some different things that we need to keep those rates where they're at and raise a couple of them a click or two to make sure that we're doing what we need to.
Okay. Again, I got to go, but that public hearing, 6:30 Thursday at the board offices there. Paul, I appreciate your time.
Exactly right.